This is The Coaching Inn, a podcast from 3D Coaching. Welcome to The Coaching Inn, 3D's virtual pub. I'm Claire Pedrick, and today my companion is Coach Josephine Knowles, who emailed info@3dcoaching.com with a question. And she said this: I'd love to reflect on how coaching can be useful in terms of power and powerlessness, working with those facing survival of some kind. So I said to Jos, come to the Coaching Inn and let's talk. So welcome.
Thanks.
So tell us a bit about you and about your coaching journey and then about your question.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you for having me. My name's Josephine Knowles, and I have been working alongside women facing sexual exploitation for about 27 years. And I think my journey around coaching has come about because I've been working, how do we work with people who have very little power and facing power and powerlessness? And so I came into coaching because I was really genuinely looking for kind of more ways of engaging. And I think I just found in coaching a kind of aha moment of that partnership approach that is so often lacking in our work with people that we get into. So I was sort of really intrigued and drawn in a time during the pandemic when life was pretty tough, actually. And kind of found some energy and some insight and some enjoyment and play with coaching that I was really surprised at, actually. So that was kind of the why. But I guess my question has been, you know, when someone is truly traumatized and harmed and has got very little personal power, like where, I guess where the boundaries of coaching was, I guess, was the question I was thinking about in my head. And I still don't have the answer, and I don't know where I ever will, but it's a good question, right? Where's the limit? Where do you need another model, maybe? So that's kind of where I was thinking.
And what a great ethics question to hold in your mind.
Because
we're not going to know the answer, are we?
No.
Although I don't want to shortcut our whole conversation, of course.
Well, we're done. All right, good.
Let's not be done. I'd love to start by asking you, what insights did you have on that journey and have you had since you started putting it into practice?
So many insights. I guess the big one was around power. And, there's this idea of power over, power to, and power with. And so often we start our journey with the power over. You know, we come in with our good intentions and our good helping mechanisms. And actually, I think in the long run, it disempowers women, or in my context, I've seen that, and they become more dependent on us. We rescue them more because they need us more. And the outcomes just go down and down and down. And we rarely see women who actually kind of can get out of that framework, because it's almost like I was thinking of the Cartman family drama triangle. Do you know that one? It's persecutor, yeah, rescuer, and victim. And I think we dance around that for a long time, and probably only useful when we burn out and realize that we don't have all the answers. And so I guess for me, my longer journey has been around recognizing my own power and my own privilege and what that looks like for someone I'm working with. Yeah. And just feeling the limits to it, I guess.
And as our listeners know, that's my journey too. How do we really acknowledge our own privilege? I think as you talk, I think what's really interesting is I think that we accidentally disempower people, because I don't think it's people, when we want to help, it's so not our intention. It's actually devastating to realize, I think, that actually we might be accidentally disempowering people.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's why it's almost like you need to be burnt out before you're useful. Otherwise you're using all this, what we call puppy energy. And you're like, yeah, you're just, this is about you rather than the person you're working with. And I think that's really easy to get into. But as you get experience, you realize how much you get it wrong, yeah. And how, yeah, much learning you need to put in place. And it's almost like get over yourself and then start working with people, you know, and that's why I love training. That's why I love, just get over yourself, because it's not about you. And I know you say this, and I know the Transforming Conversations course that you did was just so radical for that, really, because so many of us come with this, we want to help. So, yeah, I think what I love is that idea of partnership, and what does true partnership mean when someone is bringing less than you, less resources, less energy. You know, maybe they've slept rough, maybe they've experienced domestic abuse the night before. You know, like, really, what does that look like? And I still think, and this is probably my insight into it, I still think holding the space as if they were to bring something is the way to go, and not jump in with starting to fix and rescue and go to housing or go to drug services or, you know, whatever it is that we feel good about doing. I think it's something about still believing in her in her absolute moment of crisis. And even if it's one tiny thing, she's empowered by it. Do you know what I mean? There's something in that dynamic about that I really want to explore more, I guess.
I think one of the fundamentals for me is that when I'm working with somebody who has only the tiniest micro bit of personal power, the question I'm asking myself is, how are we going to do this so that I don't take away that last little tiny bit?
Yes. Yes.
Because actually the only way forward is to honor and respect that tiny bit, which might stay that tiny, or there might be potential in this conversation that we're about to have that it gets a little bit bigger.
Yes. And that's success, right? It's not kind of dragging her by her hair, you know. And I talk about women all the time because, you know, the majority of those who sell sex are women, and the majority of those who buy sex are men. So there is a gendered element to this. That's not to say that trans men and women are not involved, and men sell sex as well, but there is a gendered element. And so we talk about women because we want to get past those labels of sex worker and prostitute, and she's a woman like me and like you and whoever else is a woman. And so I think for me, there's something about just being really careful about that power and asking her continually, you know, that check-in, is this useful? Is this where you want to go? And one of the questions we developed with Women On Off, because we run a phone support service where women can ring us up. And again, the power is in their hand. They can put the phone down at any time. So that's great. You're not in a sort of coercion space. But one of the questions that I developed over that time of working with women was, when we started the conversation, what have you got energy for today? And sometimes it would be, I've got energy to make a cup of tea. And so she'd take me to the kitchen and we'd make a cup of tea. And then another day it might be,
who'd make the tea?
The woman that we were supporting. Yes. So just that's it. All she
we'd
had energy
go to
for
the
was
kitchen
to make.
We'd go to the kitchen and she'd make the tea.
Yeah. And so I'm on the phone to her going, so you're making the tea now? What type of tea do you like? Has it got milk in it? You know, and we're just chatting about tea. Yeah. And then, you know, maybe a few weeks later, she'd talk about, you know, the need to clear out her bedroom because it's full of rubbish and she can't think. Or maybe another week might be about trying to report, you know, her violent partner. So for me, that was about being person-centered and being on her terms. And that's, I think for me, that's what coaching really pulled out for me, this element of being on her terms and in service of the thinker, rather than us kind of dragging her out of her horrific situation, which takes guts, right, to sit with that pain and that unknowing. Really hard.
It's really hard, and that little tiny bit of personal power is really the thing that needs to be honored the most in the conversation, I think.
I love that, and I think it's, yeah, I think that's just going, you've got to be so mindful of that. And I potentially think about your own times when your power was low and how, you know, what was useful in a conversation. I think that's sometimes good to reflect on, and what was not useful. People giving advice, ugh, really, you know, that's just, it's not useful. Enabling someone to think when they're probably in their back brain, you know, in their kind of reptile state of sort of fight, flight, freeze, you know, all that kind of good stuff, you know, helping them move to their front brain and think and breathe and plan is actually quite a skill to do. But then we see kind of them reflecting on, you know, where they're at and maybe what they could do differently. And, you know, that's really exciting when you see that in a woman. And it's not all fixed and it's not all fine, but somehow you've helped her ground herself through breathing or just being in her body. And then she can start to think slightly differently. And for me, that is success, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know if you listened to the podcast I did the other day with Sean Lambert about mindfulness.
I did listen to that. It was very exciting.
And he said, we can reperceive even when there are no options. And I knew we had this coming up and I thought, Josie's going to like this.
I did like that. And the fact that you mentioned me, I was like, oh, that's so nice. Yeah, that is really... I think that's really, really crucial to talk about empowerment or talk about power and partnership. You know, even when she's got very little and you can just keep saying, you got this, or, you know, I believe in you. Or I don't even know what it is, what even the phrase is, but just reperceiving that moment of helplessness and what that looks like, I think is really, really special skill. Which I'd love to develop more of, really, and see more of our teams working in that space. So, I think that's a beautiful thing, really.
So tell me about Tango partnership and people who've only got this tiny little nugget of power.
Well, I guess what was so beautiful for me was I've been thinking about this sort of stuff that years and years and years, and then we come into transforming conversations, which is your course, and it was like, this is the next chapter. I don't believe it. It was so weird how it happened that it kind of built on all of my other thinking, and so for me it just gelled. Not that I'm practiced in it, but just the thinking gelled anyway. The practice is still to come. And so I'm still really early on in my coaching journey. I think I'm logged about 6 or 7 hours now for my ICF journey, but each one is hard one for me. Each one is kind of, it's going to take me a couple of years, and that's okay, as I sort of look at other things in my life. But I guess for me, some of the thinking that I love your Strictly kind of analogies, because I'm an Argentine tango teacher and dancer.
Are you?
I am. And through lockdown and COVID, obviously it was gone. And my morning was intense. I felt like in my body, like, all my stress, it didn't know where to go. And I realized how much tango is an expressive space for me in my dancing, and how many wondrous embraces I kind of had, really. So for me, Argentine tango, which is a social form of dancing, it's very different to Strictly, because Strictly is choreographed and Argentine tango is improvised. So every single moment is an improvised moment. And that's why when you talk about improvisation, I was like, oh my gosh, this is tango. And what I also love is that you share an axis. So you're sharing a physical space together. If one is too overpowering, the other person is kind of leaning back. And if, you know, you have to find your middle ground and hold the space together. And what I love about tango is that you have to connect to the heart first. You're connecting with your chest. And it's almost not, it doesn't matter what the steps are or what, you know, it really doesn't matter. It's about, are you connecting and embracing? And for me, those analogies come through to coaching, because, you know, I've heard coaches that reel out all these huge models and thinking, and you're like, they're all really important. Don't get me wrong. We all love a model. But actually, if the connection isn't there and the embrace and the heart, you know, it's like the steps, it really doesn't matter. And I think that really set me free. So when I think about in tango, you're just in the moment, you're trying to read your leader, and you're trying to step with the music, in the music, rather than sort of, you know, in service of the music. We talk about the tango gods and the tango music, you know, we all go into these big ethereal conversations. But the best tango for me is that you don't really know who's leading and who's following. So the best leaders are ones that they invite something, you know, usually with their chest, and you as a follower go, and you go to the music and you interpret it. But you could, by doing that, you change the dynamic and you change what the leader originally thought. Now the best leaders will then follow you, and hopefully you get this little chuckle or this kind of, you know, enjoyment of the fact that you're fully present to the moment and you're fully present to the process. And I think for me, that's what I find quite a little bit addictive about coaching, is that if you're in that little space where you're totally present to each other and you've worked through all the power dynamics and you're working in partnership, those moments of new insights where you just go, you know, where it just feels like, and it feels good in your body, you know, you're actually in your body rather than in your head and trying to think, right, where do I need to take them and what goals do they need to do? You know, you're fully in that moment. And so for me, part of my coaching journey has been about, how do I move to my body again? I don't want to be in my head thinking, you know, although the structures are great and I love the structures. How do I move into my body so that my body is giving me data, giving me an idea of maybe where they're coming from, you know, where there's tension maybe, or where there's lack of breath. Mm. And that's what I do in tango. So there was a kind of like, oh, there's a nice little marrying of moments there for me, which,
wow,
which felt good.
That's amazing. I'm going to now have to completely rewrite the section of my new book that I wrote last Friday about the Argentinian tango being about improvisation.
Thank God for that.
Please may I quote this?
You can indeed. Oh dear, that's hilarious.
I think you've just got us out of a deep hole. Thank you very much.
Yes, maybe. Yeah.
I love that bit about you connect with the heart. And then the leading and following interchanges. That's amazing.
Yes. And not everyone does that, but my favourite leaders are ones. And what they're so clever at doing is they almost read your mood, and they read whether you're feeling feisty and kind of bouncy with music, or whether you're tired and you just want to hug. And they co-create with you a tanda. The tanda is three or four tracks together in a song. So it's about 12 minutes you spend with one partner. And that is magical. You're like, that is so clever. How do you do that? How do you read somebody so well? And you would then adapt it. So you don't just keep doing your thing. You're talking at someone. Mm. You're totally co-creating in the moment. And the best leaders do that. And I can think of many that do that. And, you know, it's that. It is purely magical. And if you can learn to do that in coaching, then blimey, that's a good aim, right?
Okay. So now I've got you, and apologies to all our readers who are fed up about me and Strictly Come Dancing. I don't know if I apologise or not.
No, I wouldn't.
So if we go back to your women,
oh,
and their little tiny pearl of personal power, mm, in the tango, mm, I'm wondering about the tiny pearl of personal power dancing with much bigger personal power, and what that size differential is like.
Yeah, I mean, if I've danced with amazing dancers where I felt like a complete beginner, and maybe they're a teacher or they're so sophisticated. And there are those who are kind of probably quite arrogant enough to sort of almost talk over you, and they just pull you around and you end up feeling like exhausted, sweaty, you know, you're like, oh, that was just really awful. And you feel like you're really not, you're being talked over and you're being dominated somehow. And then there are those leaders that actually just meet you where you're at and co-create. So I think, and I also lead. So I also, when I'm trying to lead a follower, I'm trying to guess where she is at in terms of feeling her body for that good space together. So if she's wanting more, I can feel her energy kind of, come on, do more with me. Then, you know, I go, all right, let's have a go. And then if she's just a beginner and she just wants to walk, walking is the hardest thing to do in tango because it involves every single element. So we focus a lot on walking, and you need your balance, you need your core, you need your head in the right place, you need your heart in the right place, and you need to be able to walk on the beat. And if you're not sharing that axis together, it can go really, really wrong. So I'm not sure what you make of that really, but just, yeah, the small power, big power, it's the responsibility of the leader to read their follower and what they're good at and what they're not, and to make it good for her and to, yeah, hold that space for her, really.
So you're talking a lot about sensing,
mm,
rather than knowing.
Yes. Yes, good distinction. I like that. Yeah, you can feel it in the moment. And it is intuitive, I think. But also it is experience. So post COVID, I remember the first time I danced with somebody and we turned a corner and I nearly fell over. And he just grabbed me and we just stood there wetting ourselves laughing because we're like, oh my gosh, I nearly fell over, because my body had forgotten, you know, after 18 months. So it is a practice. It is an art. And I guess I see coaching like that. It is an art. It's not a science. It's not a technical thing. And also what you bring to coaching, what's your unique style? And that's the same with tango. You know, my unique style is I love the pure old Argentine crunchy tango music, the traditional stuff. I'm not so keen on the nuevo new stuff. And I love, you know, the orchestras that are just so with the beat and banging. And I think, you know, again, like, what's my style in coaching? And I think that's my ongoing question. What do I bring to it? Because there's so many good coaches out there. You know, and often I think, well, you know, why me? But there's so many people who I think, I don't know, I guess there's, that's like dancing, so many people to dance with, so many people to coach. You know, I guess it's just that sometimes you get that chemistry and that's when it's really good. Yes.
So going back to your question about power and powerlessness, what do you know now that you didn't know when we started talking?
I love that question. I would wonder, I think my learning is that even the smallest amount of powerlessness can grow in a conversation. And that's how we speak, how our body language is, you know. And what it says about our own belief systems, I think. So I'm pretty sold. And even if it didn't work, like, it's a good place to start, right? You start from that approach. I think it's better than the rescue model, where suddenly we've got a power dynamic that I'm, you know, I'm the adult here and they're the child that I've got to rescue or fix. And that's so much of the work is like that, you know, sadly.
It reminds me, Jo's, it was 10 years ago because it's just come up on Facebook. So 10 years ago, we had a family crisis. Well, we had a number of family crises around the health of my husband, the health of my daughter, and we had a flood in the house that meant we couldn't live there. It was truly awful.
Yeah.
And we found ourselves living out the back of a car because the insurance company would only give us two nights in a hotel at a time before they renegotiated. So it was just horrendous. And I can remember I had different responses from people. And I had the people who came up with a slightly diagonal head and kind of touched me on the shoulder and went, I'm so sorry, it must be awful. At which point I'd just cry and kind of lose it. And I used to go into the office on a Monday and my colleague Sue Blanche, who's done some of these podcasts, used to sit me down before I started doing any work. And she'd say, so what do you need to do today to be able to get through this week? And I think probably every week I'd go, I need to cry. So she'd go, okay. And then I'd cry. And then she'd say, is that enough? And I'd go, no. And then she'd say, is that enough? And I'd go, yes. And then I'd be able to get through the week, because that's the difference between going, poor you.
Yes.
Which actually just made me lose it again.
Yeah.
And somebody going, you've got this.
Yeah.
What is it you need right now in this moment? And it was extraordinary.
What a wondrous person to have around.
Totally.
I guess that's my desire, that, you know, that whole idea of what do you need?
Yeah.
Such a good question. You know, what do you need in this moment? What do you need for this week? What do you need for this hour? You know?
Yeah.
Those are great questions, I think, when someone's coming with multiple disadvantage and complexity, because there's no way you're going to be able to deal with it all. And they've lived with it as well for a number of years. So you're not the answer, you know, when we start thinking, oh, I can sort these people out. And I think that space that holds that compassion is a beautiful thing, really. So I'm glad you had that friend there. And I'd love more people to be that sort of support to those that need it, you know, not just women, but just those that are in those really hard places. It's a real practice and an art, I think.
So if there was one question or offering that you could offer to people who recognize from this conversation that maybe there's some work to be done there, what would you say to them?
it probably comes back to get over yourself. You know, get yourself a spiritual director, a coach, a mentor, whatever, and really get sort your own habits, really, and practice asking those hard questions, you know, with people who are safe before you let loose on, you know, people who have vulnerabilities, people who are in really tricky circumstances. And sadly, the training in our sector is not always great. So, you know, we do a lot of training now and we're trying to do more of it. But, you know, there's actually a lack of that, and more the experiential training, which is, I know what you do. There's loads of head stuff. It's just not useful because we all forget, right? It's got to go into your body. It's got to go into your practice.
Yeah. And it's only in the experiential training, isn't it, that we realize what we've just done.
Yes. Yeah. And keep learning. And so we keep asking, you know, what went well, even better if, you know, to get people to reflect on what they actually did and to be a bit of a mirror for each other as well, and noticing, you know, patterns. And I know one of the things that you said about notice, don't diagnose, you know, that I feel like I could, you know, paint that in glitter all over the office. It's like, oh my gosh. And I think the more you practice that, the more you're able to deal with live conversations with, you know, whoever, wherever people are at. But lots to learn, right? I mean, yeah. As I learn and learn and go, oh, let's scrap all that old stuff. Let's start again. Let's simplify it.
Me too. I'm going to have to go into a dark corner and listen to this episode of the podcast, because I'm thinking, my goodness, I've learned a whole load in this last 30 minutes.
You're so kind to say that. You're so kind to say that.
Yeah. And I need to sort of sit with it and just sit with it and see what learning, you know, what deeper learning comes from it. So thank you. What a pleasure.
You're so kind to have me. I felt really bold in saying it, really. And I thought, oh my gosh. But it's good. It's good to do these things and stretch you, right?
So how do people contact you if they want to talk about the Argentinian tango or your charity work or coaching?
Yes. So I'm on LinkedIn, and that took a big brave step to do because I was so resistant. I'm like, I'm not going to do this. It's patriarchal. And, you know, so here I am on LinkedIn. Beyond the Streets is our organisation. Tango is probably TLC in Southampton, really. So that's how we do lessons tonight, back with the beginners. And I've got an email so I can send you all our handles and everything.
Oh, fantastic. So I'll put those. Yeah, I'll put those in the show notes. Thank you, Joes, so much. What a great way to spend half an hour. Thank you.
Can I leave you with one quote by Lila Watson, who's an Aboriginal activist?
Please.
She says, if you've come to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you've come because your liberation is bound up with mine, then let us work together.
I've gone all gum bumpy.
That quote has been kicking my ass, excuse my language, for 25 years.
Yes, it felt as though I'd heard that over time. Thank you. That's one to think about.
Yes.
I'll pop the text of that in the show notes so people can go back to it. Thank you, Joes. Yes.
Thank you, Claire. It's so nice to see you.
And you. So if you have a question about an aspect of coaching where you'd like to dig deeper, let's talk at the Coaching Inn. Email us on 3dinfo@3dcoaching.com. And thinking about this together out loud will enable other coaches to learn and make their own meaning. Thank you so much, Joes.
You're welcome. Lovely to see you. Thanks for having me.
And you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you've enjoyed what you've heard today, please share the podcast with a friend who might also be interested. And if you'd like to become one of our regulars at The Coaching Inn, you can subscribe at Podbean or on iTunes. We look forward to meeting you on the next podcast.
You've been listening to The Coaching Inn. Find out more about us at www.3dcoaching.com.